G'day, Michael here from Armidale's Community Radio, FM 92.1. What you're about to hear is a recording of the Armidale Meet the Candidates session, which was convened by the New England Vision's 2030 Institute, and which was held at the Armidale Bowling Club on Wednesday the 4th of September 2024. The Armidale Bowling Club doesn't have a facility for broadcasters to connect directly to their PA system, so the audio is recorded by microphones placed throughout the room. As a result, there is some unavoidable reverberation. We at Armidale Community Radio, FM 92.1, hope you find this recording interesting and useful.
So I'd like to welcome you this evening to meet the candidates for 2024. New England Vision's 2030 Institute is a non-profit futurist think tank based in Armidale, New South Wales, with a vision for the future economic development and social well-being of the New England region. We meet with stakeholders and government at every level to examine the issues and any conflicts and follow up with recommendations and local action. Let me introduce the NEV 2030 team. My name is Maria Hitchcock and I'm convener of 2030 Institute. Martin Levins, who you've already met, will be managing the presentation. Associate Professor Dr. Julie Roberts has organised the candidates. There's Julie up the back. Dr. John Atchison will manage the special question. Dr. John Nevin will manage the sent in questions. And Peter Sneakers will manage questions from the floor. And we plan to close at 7:30. Our candidates are arranged alphabetically according to the leaders of the groups and ungrouped candidates. The first two rows were reserved to other members of the groups. A slide with five dot points sent to us by the candidates has been prepared for each speaker. They will be shown while the speakers are answering the special question. All questions, including the special question, will have a two-minute limit. A countdown clock will appear on the screen. We have 10 questions sent in, and these have been directed by each sender at up to three candidates. They will be named on the screen. We don't have time for any other candidates to answer those questions, unfortunately. There is a time pressure for us tonight. There will be a short amount of time for questions from the floor after the sent-in questions. These can be directed to other members of the groups, apart from the leaders out the front. And I would like you to perhaps balance things out a little bit. So if you notice that a candidate has not had a question for a while, maybe you could direct a question to them. So people wanting to ask a question from the floor will need to line up on that side. All right, I'd now like to hand over to Dr. John Atchison for the special question. This special question was sent to every candidate.
Thank you, Maria. The special question is, what, in your opinion, is the biggest problem in our region and how would you solve it? Each candidate is allowed 2 minutes and then the timer will come into action. So over to Sam as the first speaker. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
Awesome.
It doesn't start on thank you, does it? All right. The biggest problem this region has faced and has faced for the last two decades is a low and stagnating population, and we've been living with that and the consequences of that. Most of the problems that we identify in this region are a consequence of that low population. So whether that's lack of vibrancy in the town centre, limited options for healthcare and tired amenities. So what we need to do is turn that around. First up, to solve it, we need a target, and that target is at least to get to 40,000 people as quickly as we possibly can. Specifics are water security and water quality. So the current storage that we have is provides 60% of the secure yield that we need for our current population. Raising Malpas by 6.5 metres to double its capacity only gets us to 80% of what we need. So that is not water security. The new council, though, is going to have to make some serious decisions. The PWA, the reports are being finalised, so very soon in the new council term, the new councillors are going to have to decide what they want to do, prioritise what areas they want to address first, whether it's Malpas, whether it's Oakey, whether it's water treatment plants or a combination, and how much are we prepared to pay. We can't get water security for free. The next thing that we need is an enviable lifestyle, because we are in a war for population. We're competing with other regions for that population, so we need to have attractive things for people to do. I'd like us to become a leader in adventure tourism. So think of things such as the world-class mountain biking competitions, the rail trail, proper access to our gorges. We need to get into that. We need to capitalise on the opportunities of the res. The new council will create the New England Future Fund. We need to be an attractive place to do business, and to finally effectively lobby state government. We need to change their population projections. Thank you.
Well done. I think the mayor has set the standard for the night. Over to you, Josh.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, New England Visions, for organising the event. Thanks, everyone, for turning up. Thanks to the bowling club for running a venue. Look, my name's Joshua Fittler. You might know me as the organiser of the Fair Rates protests 4 years ago. You might know me as the Irate Payers Administrator. You might not know me as a long-time local. My family has been in the region for 160 years. I think Brad Withers' family might have me beat by about 39,000 years, but I'd be a close second. But that being local means that I'm accountable to the community. If I make people unhappy, they're going to grab me, they're going to shake me. My answer to the question that we've been sent, what I believe the greatest challenge for our local government and local governments across Australia is controlling costs. It's a constant battle in order to be able to be fed by the ratepayer base. We need to be able to manage our finances as schmickly as possible. And it doesn't have a clear solution. It's going to be a matter of collaboration with the community and reporting to the community, because we have over 20,000 heads in this community, and they are hands down every time going to be able to come up with better ideas than one. As a councillor, I would be doing two things. I would be relaying these facts to the community through my extensive social media networks. I would also be giving that community a chance to provide feedback, and then coming up with solutions to those problems and then voting at them on council meetings. Finally, as a councillor, I would use my position to lobby state, mostly state, but also federal government. There's a few issues there. For instance, our depreciation's included in the budget every year. So we're expected to put away a large sum of money for in 80 years' time when a bridge breaks down to replace that out of our own pocket. Now, that's not really, in my view, a feasible idea. You can have lots of changes in government in that time, spend that money. Also, it's regular for the state government to provide at least partial funding for the renewal of those infrastructure projects. So with the community backing, I would like to... Thanks.
Thank you, Josh. Just remind everybody about the special question.
biggest problem in our region, and how would you solve it? And now we're going to hear from Eli.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks all for coming. I'm Eli. I'm running for the Independent Regional Alliance. We formed a group based in Gora, and our aim is to try and deliver for the regions, for those fringe on the not receiving the benefits they should be. So, unlike the other group, we're trying to cater for the outsiders who are neglected. Now, Gora hasn't had a shire for the past 9 years, I think. They don't have wards to be represented, so the fight for us is very tough. And one of our core policies is to deliver wards back to the Armidale Regional Council so the people on the outside can get proper democratic representation. The other issue that we feel is very important for the region, and if we were serious about growth and prosperity and bringing new investment, is water security. Now, since coming to town, and I'm new to town, maybe everyone not know that, I've been around for 2 years, but since coming and started this campaign, I've realised water is the most important issue for people. Perhaps not much in Armidale, but in Gora it is. They went through a horror drought in 2019. They ran out of water. 5 years later, they still have no secure water in case there was another drought. Now, they were promised that the capacity at Malpas will increase by at least a double. Now, that hasn't happened, and we believe that should be a priority for the new next council. Now, it's good to plan the Oki Dam.
Thank you, Eli. Over to Natasha.
Hello everyone, my name is Natasha Ledger, and the biggest problem facing us at the moment is, of course, water. And for 5 years, Gora hasn't been able to drink their water. Their water filtration system has not been upgraded for 5 years, and I've been pushing it for 5 years. Transportation is another biggest issue in our area. This is a business plan for the transportation forward for our trains. This includes cannery for farmers, so there's only two canneries in Australia. This includes a cannery so that they can grow food. It includes a waste generator incinerator because our waste tips have reached their 100-year life cycle, and now each council is up for $250,000 for their lease ticket, lease licences annually. This is another cost to councils that they can't afford. Also, you've got the tip out on top of the four rivers with nuclear waste. We've got nuclear waste dumping on the tip onto the top of four rivers going down to the coast. Now, this is a big issue because the ground under that, the engineers have said that it gets crushed and crushed and crushed, and it is becoming unstable and it won't last the longevity that we require. There are a lot of issues. I've got 10 of these business plans today to excite you about the trades business plan. And another issue is that we are isolated. It affects our health and it affects the welfare of the people when you're isolated. So that is another issue in our community. Another issue is not being heard. I have asked to put this business paper on the table of council, and
thank
it was unaccepted.
Hi, I'm Susan. I'm representing the Labor Group on Council. When people come to town, they want to live in a house. When people come to town, they want to live in a house, and the previous council has planned a housing strategy. I want to extend that and build small to medium houses. When people live in the region, they want jobs. We want to extend some industries and look at industries in the town and in the region. One of the biggest issues for our region is health, access to health and access to transport. But not only that, childcare. Childcare is the biggest issue, which I want to work with state and federal governments to work on childcare, because it affects our doctors and specialists who come up from other places to work in Armidale for a day. They can't come because they either can't come on the planes, or the nurses don't have enough childcare and they can't come back to work. I'm aware that childcare is a huge issue for everyone. Work. I want people in this region to be a community. So we want a community for all people, including young people, and I want to work on an activity based or a place
based. Thank you, Susan.
Hello everyone, my name is Madan Kumar Narayanamurthy. I think I bet that this is the first longest name that you'd have come in your life. I moved from Sydney, a busy town, to Armidale with my family, and found this as a home after 9 years. One of the reasons were that this is a very welcoming town, very unspoiled beauty. We love unspoiled beauty and the Four Seasons. And I think this town has got a great potential for growth. This growth should not stop. And what is stopping us from growing is that we don't have a proper infrastructure to support the growth. And also, health workforce is very sort of a key for the growth as well. If people are new arrivals want to see this as a home, like me and like other families, they want to see that they have a good infrastructure that supports for their livability, good health support, so that they can make sure that they have a very keen support here, and also affordable housing. If these three key elements are not being sufficient here, probably they won't see this as their home. So that's the reason why I will be fighting for these three things. But also, to help it solve, we should probably look at working to build a health committee that can actually consist of the local health experts and other lobby governments to come in and fill the gap to provide some strategies, so that, like what being told us, that we should have a proper childcare to whether these healthcare workers can find this as a home. And also, expansion of growth elements, including hosting services like public transport. Public transport is also a key element where people can see that they can actually move from one place to another place within this region, which is also where we need some more growth here. More importantly, the future generations, the youth, are finding very disengaged in this community.
Thank you, Madam.
Hi everybody, and thanks for coming. Oh, can I start yet? I'd like to thank you all for turning up here. It's amazing and inspiring. I've got a completely different take on our biggest problem. I think that our biggest problem is right here in our hearts. And I'm talking about bullying and a lack of listening in our community. Now, I think I don't disagree with pretty much anything that's been said before. We do have quite a lot of complex problems, and a lot of them do relate to our relationship with the state government. And the state government is selfish. It really thinks about us as way out on a limb, not worth it, And it's, and as Sam said, it's pretty hard to get them to even see us, let alone give us the proper infrastructure that we need. But I think we've got to start by backing ourselves in and stop bad-mouthing our town and stop bad-mouthing each other. And if this community has shown me one thing in the last two brilliant weeks of campaigning, it's that we trash talk way too much. Adam Marshall has pointed it out, and look, I'm the first one. The finger points back at me. I've got to stop being divisive myself. I try not to be. But every single one of us in this room, in this community, we've actually got to step out and start practicing genuine community values and love for each other. And that goes right up to council. Not having decisions behind closed doors, not having an in-group and an out-group. You know, when we get sick, someone gives us a call. Bullying in this community has just got to stop, and it's endemic. And we need, on social media, in the street, if we have an opportunity to make this place a better place for someone we know, a tourist, someone we don't know, a newcomer, or someone who's been here for five generations, we've got to step out and do that. We build a community, they will come. But if a community comes from the ground up, from the quality of the people that we are. The state government's not going to rescue us anytime soon. But what will rescue us is
our
students.
Okay, well, the big challenges in this region are improving quality of life and action on cost of living. Low-cost energy deals as part of our renewable energy benefit schemes. The ACT has done it. The Melbourne Mayor plans to do it. So we should do it too. We can also encourage affordable, energy-efficient housing to help reduce electricity bills, perhaps again funded from our renewable energy benefit schemes, provide advice on energy efficiency, and making government rebates as easy to access in our region as they are in larger cities. Another key factor is rates, fare rates and charges. Residents should not subsidise intensive water use. And we should also question the need for a third instalment of the 3-year special rates increase. And part of that increase was for co-contributions to grant funding. Now, with 50% funding, say, from our community benefit scheme, we could double the benefit of those schemes, a win-win situation, and perhaps avoid that third instalment. Listening to the community is also vitally important to reduce costs and improve services. So efforts are directed at our most important needs. User-friendly software could allow residents to report problems and see council's responses, and therefore encourage residents to share their ideas with council and the community. If we had something similar to the apps from Woowarra and Newcastle, we'd be well on our way to being a really, really brilliant region. And finally, I really want to emphasise again that residents should not subsidise intensive water use. The public consultation on willingness to pay, originally scheduled for September 2022, should be our priority. I was shocked to hear in June that the cost floods were okay, and also that residential water bills could almost double if we don't get 90% grant funding. And before agreeing to this, we should use...
Thank you, Dorothy. Over to you, Rob.
Thank you. And I'm representing Group E. We believe water security is the main issue. We believe the water security, and it's not been addressed. We were told there was $27 million on the table at the Marlborough Stand, and it's no longer there, and we'd like to know why. And that was the best option. We purchased Oakey Dam for $4.3 million with a hole in the wall. But the dam we already owned when you and the county council controlled it. The state government, I believe, should have given us the dam. The state government took it over along with the millions of dollars that was in the account at the time of deregulation of the electricity grid. We would also like to know why the wall was not repaired by Essential Energy when they claimed the insurance for the wall. That's a question that we need to ask. It's a very serious question. This dam can still be used as a hydro dam, as all the generators are still there, providing the wall is repaired. It could also be used to construct a pumped hydro system, and we could use solar with that, and by saying that you could use the solar to pump the water back during the day, and that would be a great battery. So I think that really needs to be addressed together. If we need to bring industry in our region, along with the planned 4,000 homes, we need to increase our water security. We believe the best option is to increase the wall at Gyra. This is something that could be affordable and fairly easily achieved. Also, water cycling is also an option. And that's been done successfully in other places. I remember going to Echuca 30 years ago, where they very successfully and used that for irrigating the parks and all the...
Thank you, Rob.
All right, not long, so here we go. My name's Bradley. I'm running on my own, but I'm here to represent the forgotten, the unheard of, the unthought of, the voiceless, and the quiet ones just living their lives. Our biggest issue is that this community lives in silos. It lives in echo chambers, and we're all trying to outdo each other to get ourselves ahead. What we need to do is knock down those walls in those echo chambers and remember that we're all our brothers and sisters keepers. A good council will do that. We're not reinventing the council. The council as an organisation is already looking after things that are big issues, things like the water, things like housing, things like planning, transport. They've already got plans for that. This last council that I was on and a few others were on, we've already put in plans for that. Right? We need a community and we need representatives that are going to continue to push forward those plans and not hold back. If anyone gets up here and says that I'm going to change this and change that, they're going to have to change all the plans for that. All right. What we need is people that can understand where we're heading, the track that they're heading on, and keeps pushing in that direction. You need visionary leaders with pragmatic thinking. And that's the record that I believe over the last 7 years that I've set. 7 years ago, I got up here and I mentioned that as a progressive community, we need to be wary of shysters and snake oil salesmen coming in and trying to take advantage of our progressiveness, and we're still at that point. We need to continue to be progressive but be wary of those who are out there pushing their own barrow, out there for one subject where I think this council can walk and chew gum at the same time and look after a lot of issues at the same time. And that'll do me.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you. In the wild, Jenny, that's an accusation that I will deny. I think, you know, I've listened to all of these other speakers, and I think the root of the problem for me, or for what I've been told, is that we've had a bit of a disconnect. We've had a bit of a disconnect between community and council. There's a lot of feeling out there that council has become a no council. I don't think that that's true. I think that there's been a lot of miscommunication. There's a lot of problems to solve. That's true. But I've been in business for a very long time and I don't have unlimited funds, I can assure you. And I'm used to getting things done with the resources that are available. And wherever those come from, wherever the problems are, the costs remain the same no matter who is making the decisions. The problem is that there are a lot of people who are not prepared to make the decisions. Those decisions have been started in the last few years, and it's good to see that there's been some growth in town. But when I talk to business people who tell me that they've had a DA before council for 2 years, that concerns me. And if we want to grow, then we don't need to introduce new industries. We just need to support the businesses that are in town, who are led by decent, hard-working people who want the best for our community. And when we get that business community firing, people will be knocking down the door to come into town. And that will allow us the growth to be able to achieve all of the other things that are happening, whether it's the tip, whether it's the water. It's all a numbers game. You don't get ahead by reducing your revenue. You get ahead by squeezing every ounce of value out of every dollar you have.
We're right on time, as I understand it, so over to Maria.
Okay. Okay, well, in this next section, we've had questions submitted from the community to be directed to specific councillors. And again, we're constrained by time again here, so there'll be a set period for each person to which the question is directed to answer, and then they'll be cut short. We have to do that in order to finish on time. So the first question sent in is, what is the first thing you will do when you get elected? And we just need to run down from A to Z as to what you intend to do.
Well, I need a microphone, sorry.
Yeah.
All right, John.
You've got one. There's 2 minutes for each candidate to talk.
Be battery problem. So I've got 2 minutes. I don't need 2 minutes. Actually, the first thing I do is sleep in the next morning. Then I get phone calls from people who tell me they didn't vote for me. But congratulations anyway. No, that's a joke. You know, I do is reach out to the people that I don't know, new people that are on council, and try to have a copy and find out, you know, what they want to bring to the table and how we can work together. So that's the absolutely first thing that I would do. I'm also compiling a list of all the things that come to me. I haven't been able to be out in the community very much because of the health this term, but it's been wonderful actually getting out there and talking to people. So I've got a list of things. So the second thing I'll do, or the concurrent thing I'll do, is send emails and get those people in and just try and action the particular concerns. So it's just basically reaching out to form a relationship. It's a team sport. And Bruce Newbury brought his sportsmanship award from 1963 to remind me that what our team stands for, Team F, is working together, our future together. 2 minutes isn't enough to really talk about that. The House Stands Firm, that was the motto of the original Armidale Council. And I think that Abraham Lincoln gave a famous speech called The House, The Divided House, and that speech was the beginning of abolishing slavery in the United States. I think we've got a similar challenge. Obviously, we're not the US and I'm not Abraham Lincoln, but we've got a big challenge in front of us to start to back ourselves in as a whole community. So talking and reaching out to people and continuing those conversations that I've been so privileged to have. It is such a privilege to be a councillor. It's amazing. That must be 2 minutes. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Margaret. I might pass the microphone on to Sam, and we'll ask Sam if he could now have his 2 minute spiel about what he will be doing when he first gets in.
Thanks very much. First thing would be to thank those that have all pitched in. That's number one. But really, the very first thing that I would do from a council perspective is to contact everybody that's been elected to council. And, you know, Margaret touched on it, Brad touched on it. It is about working as a team. We need to keep that teamwork going, and we need to have good relationships with each other. That doesn't mean that everyone thinks the same or says the same thing. But, you know, everybody has a right to be heard. Different views will come in, so it's getting the team together and everyone being comfy. So ideally a coffee with, you know, hopefully I'll be one of the nine. We can get together and sort that out. Thank you.
Thanks, Sam, for being nice and concise. We'd ask the Josh to now give his 2 minutes talk.
Hello. Gather feedback, report. That's it.
That on. Well, on the first day, I'd like to congratulate all the winners and put our differences aside, lay the guns down, cut out the politics, and try work with everyone to deliver for the community. It is what is needed the most, and we're only fighting now to serve you, the community. Once that is done, I'm sure we can all work together to deliver. Thank you.
High rates, lack of water, no transport, no communication, and no consultation process, and then I've just heard depreciation is an issue. Well, that wasn't in Euralia Shire Council where I was incubated. The first thing I would do is sack the general manager. Absolutely. Euralia went through. Absolutely. It's disgraceful what's happening. Your rates are increasing and look to increase again, and your water rates look to double. It's not necessary, and it comes down from the leadership. And being from Euralia, I've seen them sack three of them. So I know exactly what's done, and I've worked with five general managers, and seeing the general manager, his performance, that is the first thing I'll do. The second thing I'll do is make sure Gara's filtration water is upgraded. And the third thing I would do is put this business plan on the table so we can all move forward on it. It includes industry sheds so we can shut down all of our tips and reduce all our tip fees so that the industry sheds become our new go-to market, providing jobs along that railway line so that we can move into the future together, and we'll all have to work on it together. See, this is a program where every single council has to initiate an industry shed along that line because their tips will be closed because you cannot afford $2 million in remuneration tip fees every single year. Things have been unplanned in this area, and that's the first thing I would do when I get onto council. Yeah, I'm about action and about results and about this funding coming from the industry fund in federal and state government, getting money. I got $53 million for Euralia Shire Council. I deployed Bundara sewage system and stormwater catchments.
Now, Susan, if you like,
thanks, everyone. Like a number of my... Thanks, everyone. As a number of other candidates have suggested, it's about teamwork. Okay, is that better? Three times lucky. As a number of other candidates have suggested, it's about teamwork. We work on committees. There are a number of events on council, so I would be speaking with the other councillors and talking about the issues that concern them. I will say that with the previous council, that most of us were all concerned about our region. We all wanted to see our region prosper. We all loved our hometown, and we wanted to do the best by it. We all have different ideas. Some ideas are great. Some ideas are fabulous. Some ideas get thrown by the wayside, and sometimes your opinion is in the minority, and the council votes for something else, and you have to say, okay, that's council policy, you mightn't like it, but we'll see. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you. As first I've elected, I probably would make sure that I build a relationship with my council team members so that we all are not fighting each other. Number two is that I heard that there's a long disconnect between the council and the community, which I'll make sure that I'll work with all the council members to build that rapport with the community so that they build confidence that this council team can actually deliver. And number three is, most importantly, is that pick up the three top issues and put on some action plans to it so that we can get on a job and make sure that the council and especially the community sees that this council team is actually putting some action plans, like the water management plan, affordable housing, and improving some infrastructures. That's what I'll be working on. Thank you.
Thanks, Dorothy. You're next.
Okay, well, as everybody else has said, what I would do is talk to all the councillors to work on all the things that we need to get done. Find out their interests and how we can all work together to get things done. Because, as you've seen, we've got lots and lots of exciting policies, willingness to pay on water, funding to raise Malpas, working on meaningful community consultation, because our job as councillors is to represent your views, and that means we have to know what they are. We have to work to get better ways of communicating. So if you have a problem, that should be our job to try and solve it. And I've also talked to several of the other councillors and other candidates, and I know what they stand for, and it's surprising just how much we agree on what needs to be done. It's really, really surprising, even the different members of different parties and independents, and yet we all seem to agree on what the best things for this region are. But we also have to remember that Rome wasn't built in a day. This council has worked quite well together to actually get things in place, get policies in place, and we've made great progress. And I think what we'd like to do, if I'm elected again, is to work, build on that progress, to share more and more ideas of what else we can do, and do it efficiently and cost-effectively, so we don't have to have large increases in rates. We can act on cost of living, we can improve our quality of life, and do all the things that you want and need us to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Dorothy. I'll ask Rob Tatum to give us his address.
I'd like to fix everything in the first month. That's not going to happen. But look, I suppose there's two things. One about the water issue that we've raised there earlier, and you know that's obviously a major issue. But I suppose the thing I'd really like to look at is business. And being in business in this town for 50 years, we've just seen that slip away from us. So, and with my business skills, I'd really like to be able to tackle that one and work towards that. And what I would really like to see is to start to open up another industrial area, and that one they've developed, and that was a great thing the council actually did, and has been a fair success. But we need to go with that next stage, and the next stage should be a much better facility. And when I say that, we need to make a larger development with larger blocks and improve the electricity. I know that was a major issue. And we have the water there now, sewers there, and I'm sure we can actually make that next stage work fairly quickly. And that's the only way we're going to attract the larger business here to this town. So a lot of work towards that, and that's one thing I'd like to try and achieve. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. The question is, what is the first thing you'll do when you're elected?
Sweet. First thing is you've got to be inducted. So after doing either your oath or your affirmation, would be the first thing to do as a councillor, you go through, you're not reinventing the wheel, as I've already said. As a councillor, you get there and you get inducted. You learn what you can and can't do. Council already had that set up for you, the operational side of council. It'll come in and say, this is what you can do, this is what you can't do, this is your role as a councillor. You go in there, you learn that. For some of us older heads, you can get a refresher. For some of the newer people, they can probably get a dose in reality on what exactly councillors can do. And then you'll get set up to understand the plans already in place, whether it's a long-term LSPS, the housing plan, the budgets, all that sort of stuff, things that need to be decided on by the governance side. Because you've got to get that understanding of what really you can do. There's so many plans that have already been put into place, and to be able to change that, it's going to take a lot of work. So, and then you've got to get an agreement with your other councillors. So you've got to get in there. First thing is you learn all that. You learn what the other councillors stand for, some of the things that they can put into place. They might have some other goals that they want to improve. As Susan mentioned, might be working in health and childcare and trying to get a few more of those things in. Someone might want to jump on the sports council and get some more statewide sporting events here. So you work with them and use your connections with the community. As I said earlier, we all represent different parts of the community and we represent the whole community. So you might know someone that could help that person achieve their goals. So you're working as a team with that, but you're always working towards what the plans are already set in place and how does it benefit you. That's the first thing you're going to do. You've got to go in there with that frame of mind. You go in there looking to change
and blow up the building to speak is not going to help anyone. We've got to, as I said, keep the ship moving forward, keep the train moving forward in a pragmatic and visionary way. Thanks.
We'll ask Jenny Wild now to give her 2 minutes spiel on what she would do.
The first thing she would do when she is elected.
Thank you. The first thing I'd do is ask a lot of questions. I want to know where we're at, how far we've gone with the plan. Are there any barriers in the way that are stopping us from reaching our goals? Are we all on the same page? And then I would like to talk to the people who are involved in that, because I'm not going to know everything. And I'm not going to pretend to know everything. And the one thing I do know is that people with a problem often already know the answer to their problem. They already know the solution. They just need support and some vision to help them get there. So I'm going to ask a lot of questions and talk to a lot of people, because that's what I do. I'm not going to be the answer for everybody's problem, but I want to hear about what you think is going to be the best way. I can fit within a framework. I understand the legislation, I understand the barriers that are in place, but I also understand that we can work within those frameworks and still succeed.
I'm just going to cut in here for a sec and let you know that this event is actually being recorded by 2ARM FM. The microphones are in the front there. It will be podcasted probably either at the end of this week or maybe next week. Thank you. Sorry.
Thanks, Maria. We now have a series of questions which have been specifically directed to councillors. Now, the next question is, if you are elected, will you support the idea of 4,000 new jobs by 2043, or do you have a different idea? The question is directed to Rob Tabor, Eli Emad and Sam Copeland. So I'd ask Rob if he would start off addressing that question.
Yeah, look, this is a great issue, and I congratulate the council for doing this up to this stage, but our big concern is where are the jobs going to come from, and that I think is probably the major issue. We don't appear to have a plan for that yet, so I'd like to see that one addressed. And certainly the 4,000 homes, I don't think we've done the home of where we're going to put those 4,000 homes. And also, and the major issue that we've got is where's the water going to come from? So we've got to solve all those problems before we can actually move this thing forward. But it's a great initiative, but we've got a lot of steps to be able to take before we can achieve that. But let's work towards it. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. We'll ask Eli Emad if he could reply to that question too, please.
Being a businessman, I'm pro-jobs, and I would commend the council for having the initiative to create 4,000 jobs. Now, 4,000 jobs, don't know how they're going to create them, but we'll work to support that idea. 4,000 jobs means probably 10,000 people in Armidale. I don't think the housing is available for such increase in population in a short period of time. The economics of building new houses, it's probably not supported and not feasible, given the prices of land and building a house. You don't get that return. And in the construction industry, you can't go in and build 1,000 houses, but the price of building them won't get you back the return when you come to sell them. So although it's a great initiative, we would support it, and we'll work with council, if elected, to try and achieve it, but I don't think it's actually realistic in the short term. And water is another thing. Planning ahead, going for Oakey instead of Malpas, that will be 30 years down the track. I've asked them repeatedly if we can't get the 27 million delivered, although it was promised, how are we supposed to get $400 million to build Oakey? And 400 is the minimum. We know all these budgets blow out. So we've got to think hard about delivering for our people at the moment. The people of Gaira need water. They have to suffer through the drought in 2019. So we've got to look after our people first before we start getting people into the region. That's my take.
Thank you, Eli. We'll ask Sam Kaplan if he could give us his ideas on that question.
Thank you. Absolutely. When we decided that we needed, and this was one of the first decisions of council, and that was unanimous, that we will stretch ourselves to 10,000 people. We framed it as 4,000 jobs. So to break that down, to get 4,000 jobs, we actually need 1,500 engine room jobs. And that's new engine room jobs. So that's going to come from renewable energy and intensive horticulture. Then the secondary jobs that flow on from that are the things such as retail and services, etc., etc. So that's the framing there. In terms of where are we going to put people, Rob, you'll be delighted to know the council in July passed a housing strategy, the local housing strategy, and that identified 8,800 housing lots. We've already had two developers come to us to bring 850 of those lots online. So we've probably got a big tick in that box there. Another thing that you'd be interested in, I really encourage everyone to look at this, and that's the local strategic planning statement. And that sets out how we're going to get there. It's actually titled Towards 50,000. How do we get to 40,000 and as quickly as we can to 50,000? So it's all pretty well laid out there. And as Brad said, there are a lot of plans in place. We just need people with the impetus to keep pushing ahead. Dorothy has said, this current council has worked very well, and I totally agree. The next council needs to work very well together as well. In terms of water, that is the big decision. It's not and Eli, asking a question aggressively on social media isn't asking a question. That's showboating. We don't do that. So one of the first things that a new council is going to have to do is make the hard decisions and prioritise what to do. Whether that's Oakey, whether that's Malpas, whether it's water treatment plants or a combination.
Thank you, Sam. Our next question is addressed to Brad Winters, Margaret O'Connor and Sam Copeland in that order. And the question is, if you are elected, what are your understood priorities with respect to actions on water security? How will you support community understanding and engagement in this space? Over to you, Brad.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I'm glad I got asked that question on water, because people have got to understand, for Malpas Wall to be built, that dam has to get to 50%. You can go back and have a look at the times it's been at 50%, and it's got to stay there long enough for the work to be done. Right? So things have that might not happen again for another 20 years. So if we put all our eggs in that basket, then we're waiting for another big drought to be able to get us down to that level again. So we've got to look at something different to be able to cover that while we're waiting for the bigger thing. So it's diversifying our interest. To speak in, And water security also comes down to drinkable water, potable water, your sewerage, all that sort of stuff. I ran last time in the last election on the thing that we wanted to upgrade our treatment plants and our water plants, and that's happening. That's on its way to getting done. So we're already, that's another thing the council's already doing. Like, it's not something that we have to restart. So water security is not only about the storage, but it's about what you can do with it. Like, for some of you, especially Gaira, who have bad water, but some of you people who live up on the hills, sometimes if the pumps aren't working, you can't flush it, or the water pressure doesn't work there. So they're the sorts of things that council as a whole are working on. The plans are already there, things are getting done, but you've got to be sensible in the way that you're thinking. This idea that raising Malpas was the saviour of all things, it was a political ploy, and I'll stand by that it was a hot button issue at the time. People in power wanted to sound like they were doing something, so they promised the world and delivered peanuts. And that's what this community always gets. People that get up here and promise the world and deliver peanuts. If you follow me on social media, you know that I think the council should promise peanuts and deliver the world. And in regards to water safety, water security, that's what we're already doing. We're already heading there. We're looking at things for the future, not looking at now or things in the past.
Thank you, Brad. We'll now ask Mark O'Connor if she could give us her views on this question.
Okay, thanks. Do I only have 2 minutes for this? Can you reset it now? I just wanted to clarify. Sorry. I think we need to actually just get it all out on the table again and have another complete review of the public works advice. One thing that does appeal to me is Rob Lenihan on Eli Iman's team suggestion that Gyra actually, it's got an engineering lift built into its design. I asked about that many years ago and was told that because Gyra is integrated with Malpas, which subsequently failed in terms of the whole regional water supply, that Gyra didn't need its own reservoir to have its wall lifted. I think we've got to revisit that. I think we've got to do what our community can afford. The other thing that I think has been lost is just whose responsibility is it to provide safe and secure water to regional communities? It's not my hip pocket or yours. It's too big. It's way too big for that. Obviously, we do pay for the water that we use, but the infrastructure and the whole provision of safe and secure water is a state government responsibility. It's a very nuanced and layered issue, and I think the whole community needs a lot more transparency about this issue. Dorothy wanted me to say that 50% drop in Malpas is possible, but probably not the drop that's required. I think we've got to find that $27 million that Adam Marshall announced, and even if it requires $8 million to come out of our $30 million water reserve, that would be a more doable and sooner option and affordable for us, and it would double what's in Malpas. The whole community needs to understand this system. We've upgraded Puddle Dock, the supply lines there. People may not know that Jimmarik Dam is still a water supply dam. There is some reserves there, as well as some of our other water holding things. I think we need to share the public works advice with the whole community. We must urgently get on with the willingness to pay consultation, and we need to take notice of...
Thanks, Margaret.
We need to take notice of what other people have said, which is being discarded in the bin at the moment.
Well, now I ask Sam Copeland to be the final speaker to this question. 2 minutes, Sam.
Thank you. The Public Works Authority report that we've seen, the councillors saw a glimpse of in June. We haven't actually received the final, but it really covers three things. It covers the raising of Malpas Wall to double its capacity from 13 gigalitres to 27. It identifies Oki as our alternative water source as well. Now, the thing is, Malpas Dam is a huge bucket on a dripping tap. It doesn't fill quickly. These are what the hydrologists say. So they might be wrong, of course, but I suspect they're not. Oki is a small bucket on a fire hose. It fills very quickly. So that's what gives us water security. So it's up to council whether they decide to raise Malpas, whether they decide to repair Oki. There's also an EOI up there, if you're pleased to know, Rob, Tabor, for alternative uses of Oki. So that is the pumped hydro. Those discussions and those expressions of interest have already started. The third thing that's part of that water security is the water supply and water quality. So that's rebuilding the Gyra water treatment plant and rebuilding the Armidale water treatment plant. We need to look at all of those. It's a big decision the new council has to make. And it would be great if the state government paid for it. We are guaranteed at least 50% because we're a high-risk area, but we need more.
Thank you, Sam. Our next question that's been submitted is addressed to Rob Tabor and to Brad Witters, and the question is, how can we best harness the economic development opportunities presented by the new renewable energy industry? How could our region benefit from having access to clean, cheap energy? I'd ask Rob Tabor if he could give us his answer to that question, please.
I do wonder why I was chosen to answer that question. Look, and we've been in the solar industry for 30 years now, and love being in it. And look, I suppose when you talk about renewable energy, it's probably the best we've got. But what I see happening around the district with these solar farms really scares me. And I'll be totally honest, I just feel we've gone too far. We call it the beautiful New England, but it's slowly becoming not the beautiful New England. And that concerns me. Solar farms are very short lifespan. Being in the industry, we're seeing solar panels fail within 10 to 12 years. What's going to happen with those solar panels when they come to the end of life? Now, the concern is so much, I've been working with the University of New South Wales for 8 years to try and find a solution to solve this problem, and that's how serious that's going to be. So on large-scale solar, it concerns me. We should be concentrating on the rooftop solar, particularly the larger buildings, the commercial buildings, and they're the ones that will give us the energy. Battery storage is great, but it's limited. But it's probably going to be the next step that will give us more baseload power. So that's my spiel on that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Rob. We'll ask Brad Winters if he could give us his thoughts on this question, please.
Just a quick, how you going? I actually work for the Office of Environment and Climate Change, besides being a councillor. That's my daytime job. I think the... Keep the question back up here again, please. The economic development opportunities for the economy of this region, in the short term, it's about the jobs that those workers bring in by while they're developing and building these infrastructure things. So as they come in, they stay for a little bit. You're going to need more retail, you're going to need more schooling, you're going to need more health. So they bring in those people as they come along. But they're not going to be here for long, so then when they go, then how do we best go from there? And working for the Department of Energy and Climate Change, I know that they have forward thinking. And it's like, as Rob said, at the moment there's nothing sort of in the plans on what happens when the solar panels die out or the wind farms, they need to be changed and everything else like that. And there's a lot of talk that, oh, it just gets thrown to the ground. But we're thinking of tomorrow's problems with today's solutions. As we go along and as things, the technology gets better, there'll be job opportunities in that area on reusing the equipment that is in place at the moment. So it's like when the cars got invented, people weren't thinking about what are we going to do with these cars in 100 years. They were using them. And as I said, tomorrow's people will solve today's problems. What was the last bit of the question? How can our region benefit? I think the red zones and the four or five red zones within the state are to benefit the whole state, not just the region that owns them. So I think as a community and as a state, we'll all benefit. I like the ideas of if you want to, some rooftop solars and also personal wind farms, all that sort of stuff you can do, start to do at your own home, which then takes gives you money back and takes your cost in it away from you. There's a lot more there, but I'm only going to turn it into that.
Thank you, Brad. Our next question that's been sent in is, and has been addressed to Sam Copeland to answer, how can we get more locals in renewable energy jobs?
Can I
answer
some of these questions as well?
Okay, thank you. I don't think there's going to be a problem with job opportunities. We're already in the tightest employment market that that this country's had in 50 years. It's difficult to get work anywhere. So locals is going to be... we're going to be highly sought after. The rough numbers are that once the renewable energy zone starts, there'll be a 10-year construction period requiring 2,000 people. That's to build the transmission lines, that's to build the wind and the solar farms. So there's going to be plenty of demand for people. The Energy Corporation, which is a state government body that's charged with delivering the renewable energy zone, has mandated that $800 per megawatt of generation or capacity within the RES is to be put towards education opportunities. So that's a significant amount of money. That's going to be about $40 million for our region. So there's not going to be a problem. How do we get more locals employed? We just need to have more locals. The RES projects will suck up as much as we're able to provide.
Thank you, Sam. Our next question has been addressed to... I'm afraid we don't have time for everyone. You'll have an opportunity with questions from the floor if they wish to address questions to you. But we'll be here all night if all 20 people get up and speak for 2 minutes. So I'm afraid this is the way it's been structured, and that's the way it's going to go. Now, the next question that's been sent in and is addressed to Jane Schmuder, I think, is sitting in the audience. And the question is, how can we support our most vulnerable to benefit from renewable energy?
Thank you for the question, and it's lovely to see just such a wonderful crowd out here tonight. Thank you. I think whenever I hear something about our most vulnerable, I think about my work I've done at the Council and Community Recovery. So that's after disasters, and I went around the Armidale, Gyra, all the rural communities. I also consulted with the Aboriginal community, Azeed community, all our vulnerable communities. Currently I work at the university, at the colleges, and with the students. So when I'm thinking about how can we all benefit, I'm thinking of, I know those people, I know our situation, I know how difficult it's been after just constant disasters and the effect on us. And I see that embracing what, you know, something that we have to do. The renewable energy zone is something that is not our choice. So it's making the most of those by consulting with the communities to see what they need. I know that I work with other organisations such as, you know, the ones I've consulted with already in the Preparing All Communities Together network, but such as Sustainable Living Armidale, and see what sorts of things are going to be the opportunities for those people. So I attended a Tourism Australia Day, and it was about diversifying. So people who are, you know, on the farms and they might be concerned about this, thinking about the tourism that might they might also benefit from, the accommodation they might be able to provide for people coming to work there. I attended a day run by the Community Power Agency just for all groups in the community to see how can we benefit from offering, say, that accommodation for workers. So there's so many things that we can do, but we do need to understand the needs first. And that's what I'm good at. I'm good at connecting, listening, and that's really what I did in my recovery work. And just briefly, I just think that after working in council for 2 years, I think we've got a fantastic council. It's a great culture, and this is just something that we have to do.
Thanks, Jane. Make the most of. The next three questions address the rail trail, and the next first of those three questions are addressed to Sam Copeland and Jenny Wild. And the question is, why do you support the development of the rail trail? Sam Copeland.
Thank you. I'd love nothing more than to see trains return and run north of Armidale. The reality, though, having spoken with both sides of state government, is it's not going to happen in my lifetime, and certainly not on that corridor. So we're left with the option of doing nothing with that line or doing something. That's why I support the rail trail. It's a doing something option. I know there are a couple of other options being bandied about in the community, and, you know, if they come to fruition, great. But any reuse of that line, it needs to be rebuilt to a standard that the state government is happy with. It can't be done, you know, on the cheap. So it is a big undertaking, and that's why I think there's only one sort of bird in the hand option, and that's the rail trail. The others are great ideas, but probably aren't going to land.
Jenny Wild to give her views on that question.
Okay, the first thing I want to say is, can I live without a rail trail? Of course I can. What I don't want to live without, though, is a situation where there's no vision or there's no forward movement. In my family, I have had people work in rail. My father was in rail. My brother, Edmund Moore, was in rail. And my
daughter-in-law's brother is a train driver. So I've talked to a lot of people in the train industry, and I understand the infrastructure, and they all tell me the same thing. This is not an achievable goal. And you can run around and you can chase an unachievable goal, or you can put your mind to getting something that is worthwhile, that will be inclusive, that will increase tourism in town, increase activity, and therefore boost the region. Or you can sit on your hands and try to line up too many state governments, too many external organisations to make your dream come true. I'm a realist, I work in the real world, and I know that when there are too many barriers in front of you, you don't have to take the easy way out, but you need to be realistic in your expectations and you need to set your goals to an achievable level.
The next question that's been sent in has been addressed to Eli Imad, Rob Tabor and Margaret O'Connor. And the question is, given that trains are unlikely to return to the line north of Armidale in the foreseeable future, and if trains do return, a rail trail can be easily lifted. A rail trail provides health benefits to people of all ages. C, the rail trail will bring tourism to the region. And D, the rail trail is paid for by grants and maintenance is covered by donations. Why do you oppose the development of a rail trail? So I'd ask you by email if you can consider on answering that question, please.
Just a sec to have a look at the question. Who said they are unlikely?
Everyone.
Who says that?
It's an opinion. It's an opinion. Now, I've got to have the questions back up so I can see what they are. But at the moment, the community was promised a rail trail on a piece of land that I own. Now, when I questioned multiple councillors about what arrangements does council have with the state government to put a rail trail on, apparently they don't have one. Now, I currently have two dealings with Transport for New South Wales and the rail. I'm trying to move a single 66 kVA line a few metres away from where I have it at the moment. It's been 6 or 7 years and I can't get a resolution. Transport for New South Wales, same thing now. I've been waiting 7 months to get my approval for my project before I go to council. 7 months. Now, I think it's impossible to get the bike trail in the time limit they're proposing. I think the funds, maybe someone can correct me, the grant will expire by March. Now, currently, we have a businessman who is prepared to put a factory, clean industry, organic supplements down at Lingotham. It's a private enterprise, and they're willing to pay for the train rail reparation and rehabilitation out of the private sector. Why are we opposing it? No one will tell me that. If we are pro-jobs and we're going to create 4,000, let's start with this project, let's get council on board to support this project. That'll be the first step, instead of putting a rail trail which only serves few people. We've got to be inclusive.
Thank you, Eli. Well, now I'd like to give you his thoughts on that question.
Now, firstly, I'm not against the rail trail, but not on our line. And I believe it's been done in Queensland where they put a rail trail alongside the line. So I believe that should be an option, and I'm not sure it's been looked at, but we need to look at it if it is. And as far as the train going north again, and I'm involved with a company that's trying to do a development up there, and the train would be some use to us. We probably don't need it totally, but if that train went to Guy, we could use it. So it's not right that we say that train wouldn't go north in the future. It's still a very strong possibility. And all I'm saying is, yeah, just leave our line alone. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. We'll ask Margaret O'Connor. She'd give us her thoughts on that question.
Oh, I think my thoughts are pretty well known. I don't appreciate the degree of bias that's here, but I'll put that to one side. I need the question, Dave, thanks. The assumption that the presumption in that question that trains aren't coming back is a joke. It's an absolute joke. They're coming back all over Europe. The freight industry in Australia is absolutely desperate. What are they going to do now that the Inland Rail has stalled at Parkes? I mean, we know that the east-west line... This is such a big topic. Come to our forum tomorrow to talk about it more. But it's absolutely essential that that corridor is protected because the main north line, north of Armidale, is a critical piece of redundancy for about three or four existing lines and the proposed inland rail. We know the coastline goes out pretty much every year and will do more so under climate change conditions. There's a very big question mark about whether the inland rail can proceed in an affordable way. So our line north of Armidale should be back on the table for consideration, realistic. In 2006, when it was considered as an alternative, it was basically falsely estimated to be 8 million and the inland rail at 3 or 4 billion, sorry. Well, it was just a joke. That whole thing needs to go back on the table. The freight industry is now very concerned about problems related to climate change, flooding in the Hunter and also heat stress on the main line that goes in the east-west line around Orange. The restoration, and I'm afraid I just have to differ with nonsense that's been said behind me about this line being in poor condition. It's not. It's actually in really good condition. And it, look, I don't see blackberries. The blackberries do not mean that, as the mayor likes to say, do not mean that the line itself does not function.
Has been addressed to our next question has been addressed to Sam Coffman. I'd ask you, please, if you could listen and gain information from the questions and answers. We're not seeking to have a debate on this today. This is an information gathering exercise for you all, so you can be better advised in how to vote and support in the election on Saturday week. Question number 9 that's been sent in is addressed to Sam Coffman, and it says, why can't the council construct a rail trail on the side of the rail line, leaving sufficient gap between the two so that we can preserve the rail line for future use by trains?
Thank you. It's important to understand that the corridor itself would be preserved. The rail trail legislation that was passed at the end of 2022 provides for that. So council would only ever lease the corridor, and the state government can resume that lease whenever they wanted. So there's no problem with the corridor itself. I guess the question really is directed around the rail infrastructure. And my understanding is that there are going to be two issues with that. The first one are the choke points, so the physical choke points. So how wide is the corridor, and particularly through cuttings. The second one, and the main one, comes down to cost, where by all reports it's between 2 and 4 times as much to build off formation than it is on formation. So that's the reason there. And when you're weighing up, do you build on formation or off formation? If it's off formation at a factor of 2 to 4 times, why are you doing that? Is it to preserve the infrastructure, to keep the dream alive, or is it for some other reason? And because the state government does not have any intention to reinstate the line in its current formation on the current corridor. And that is the reality. I realise it's an uncomfortable truth for many people, a lot of people. It's an uncomfortable truth. But the only thing that's going to return trains is state government money and state government will. And neither of those are on the table. So that's why, really, it's cost why we wouldn't be able to build off formation.
thank you, Sam, for that. Our final question that's been sent in, and it's addressed to three of the prospective councillors. That's Eli, Rob Tabor, and Margaret O'Connor, and Sam Copeland as well. And the question is, what are your plans for the rail corridor running north of Armidale, and what can council realistically do to bring your plan into effect? So, Sam, you've got had the microphone. You might perhaps lead off. Sorry, the three on top there. Eli, you might lead off with your answer, please.
Well, to be elected in government, we should stay out of private business. Now, it's not what our plans need to be, it's what the private sector need to be. What we're suggesting is that the private sector pay for the line. At the moment, there is an offer for them to pay for the line and use it for commercial use. We are not saying we're going to bring people on the train. That's not feasible. But if someone is willing to pay for the line, we should stay out of it, and council should stay out of it, because it's a state government issue. Now, from what I understand, it is council that is obstructing this businessman from getting his job done. Council needs to be standing next to any businessman trying to bring job to the town. So our plan would be to support any business trying to establish an industry in the Armidale region. We will make sure that we stand side by side by anyone trying to bring jobs into the area, not rip the railway track. Thank you.
Margaret O'Connor, if you could give us your thoughts on that question, please.
Oh, hi. Well, I'll just continue where Eli left off, and I am my team's preferencing Eli. You may not know that. My view is that our council has been really ignorant of recent developments in short-haul freight by private enterprise, and you'll notice that, for example, Roger Fletcher is now doing three train lines, private train, short haul from Dubbo right to Sydney Port, and backloading grain and meat down. Short haul is becoming a really important part of our economy, and it's done by private. And I've just got to take issue with the Mayor saying in this room that only the state government is going to develop it. The only one who isn't going to develop it is probably the state government. What's going to happen is we will develop private enterprise short haul. David Peters has made that offer. It's been suggested to him that he might go to Tamworth. But what he wants to do is go down to the Cube Intermodal at Tamworth and then straight to port in Newcastle. Good plan. He wants to bring in agricultural product from this region to desiccate for his dried meals and other food products. Now, I think that we should pass a resolution telling the state government loud and clear, because they want to hear it. They want to hear what this council's view is, and say we stand with Mr. Peters or anybody who wants, or Roger Fletcher, if he wants to come back here, or anybody who wants to develop short-haul freight to the Cube Intermodal or north, if they want to pay for it. The offer is on the table to actually pay for that upgrade of the Northern Line. It's an absolutely bit of misinformation to suggest that people are expecting the state government to suddenly put passenger trains north of Armidale. That's not the expectation. It is that this council will support private enterprise in short-haul freight that they want to do down to the Cube Intermodal and out.
Thank you, Margaret.
That's the picture.
I'll ask Rob Taylor to be the final speaker to this question, and that will then end our questions that have been submitted. We will then have a session of questions from the floor.
Look, I don't have too much more to add to what's already said, but we've actually had negotiations with David Peters, and he seems to be serious. So whatever we and appears to be threatening, and we should be negotiating with them. And I don't think council's been doing that very well. So I think that's very important. But and one other thing I'd like to add is that we say there's no freight that's possible on the line. There's a big company in the world, you all know and know who they are, have actually suggested that they would use that line if it was open. So there is freight out there, and whatever that's there, we should really be looking at all those proposals. Thank you.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, it's now time for questions from the floor. If anybody has questions that they'd like to target, please queue up over here. And what we're going to do, we're going to ask people not to preempt their questions with a big prelude. We are strapped for time. So please come straight to your question. Only one question per person, please. And please direct that question to a particular candidate, either in the front row or the two rows here in the audience. Thank you. And if you can state your name and who you represent, if you do, that'll be good too. Thank you.
Najawini, hello. Alura, you're welcome. And Murrumbu, thank you all for being here on country in Annawan, Armidale. I'd like to address, look in our street. Look at the empty shops. Is the plane bringing in tourism? You get money for the plane to come to Armidale, but no tourism. The shop's still shut.
Please,
can you get up to your question? Yeah. So my question is, put the train on the track, bring the tourists to town, and look at our Aboriginal heritage. We can give you future. We've got history here. Bring us alive in your business plan and give us our future of all generations to live side by side with every culture. Murrumbu, thank you.
Do you have a question for any candidate or just a statement? Any direct question?
Mr. Cobb. How's the heritage line going on the railway track to keep our heritage, Aboriginal heritage, alive?
Thank you. I should preface it with Kerry's asked that question sort of a version of it in a slightly different format. Part of the planning for the rail trail is to do an Aboriginal cultural assessment of it, and that's a very important part. That that assessment will be done, and that's really all I can answer, Kerry. I hope that satisfied.
Thanks, Sam. And we just had a directive. If the questioners can please restrict your question to 30 seconds, and we're going to allow 2 minutes for the answer, but please direct the question to a particular candidate, and I'm going to hold on to the microphone.
I'm Elizabeth O'Hara, and I'm on the Greens ticket. I'm second on the Greens ticket. I have a version of question 4, which was asked to some members of the group, and I'd like to direct it to Dorothy Robinson. How can our community benefit from the RES?
Okay, well, I've already answered that to a certain extent. There are so many ways in which we can benefit from the renewable energy zone. As I've said, low-cost energy deals as part of our renewable energy benefit schemes. We're also just looking at all the jobs that will be created, and those jobs will not only be in construction for the renewable energy zone, they will also be in construction of the houses and all the workers. We will also be looking at managing the wildlife to make sure that all our renewable energy infrastructure is basically going to be responsible. So, that, for example, we make sure that the wind farms, we manage the wildlife, we have cameras so that they do not destroy wildlife. And then the renewable energy benefit schemes, they will also provide a good way of co-funding all the other renewable energy, all the developments we like, which could be community benefits, could be low-cost solar panels. One thing that's been happening very recently is we've now got expressions of interest for a pole-top community battery scheme. And I mean, I would be one of the, I've seen all the results of this, and I would be one of the people who will suddenly sign up for that as soon as it's available. So there are just so many ways we can improve renewable energy, because if we don't do that, then effectively what we're doing is condemning ourselves to a global warming that we don't want. We'll be condemning ourselves to pouring, you know, floods and superstorms and reduced agricultural productivity. So let's have low-cost energy instead. That's the best way we can make sure we get benefit from this. And I'd like everybody to be on board with that, because it's such a good, important thing to do. But thank you.
Thanks, Dorothy. Next question from Paul McCann.
Hi, I'm Paul McCann. I've not just been around the community for a while. I do ride a bike, I might point out. My question is to Dorothy Robertson. Why is she supporting this rail trail when which will result in unsustainable road transport? There's a billion tyres sitting in a landfill in Kuwait, and there's over a million tyres in a small landfill in Tasmania. And the world's drowning in tyres, used tyres, so why are they supporting the return, a project that will see unsustainable road transport?
Thank you, Paul.
Well, if we do get a viable financial...
Just hold it a bit closer to your mouth, Dorothy.
Well, I support sustainable transport, and even though it may or may not be possible to support the return to the rail lines further north, I mean, if there is a feasible, economically viable way of doing it, then I will support it. I have supported putting the rail trail alongside the rail lines. We can have rails plus trails, and that would be the best of the both worlds. I am just a little bit of a realist, and I understand that if it costs thousands of dollars, if the subsidy is maybe $500 per passenger trip, and that could be what is going to happen, then maybe it's not financially viable. We have to do what we can. We have to improve the rail from Sydney to Armidale. We've got no freight transport at the moment from Samworth to Armidale, and we could be putting all the stuff, all the windmill stuff, all the things could be going via rail and to our renewable energy zone, and that would be a great way of doing it. Let's see how we can do it. Let's find out how we can encourage the state government and all the other people to upgrade that rail line. And if that rail line is upgraded, then maybe there's a better chance of it going north. But what we should be doing is basically not giving up, but finding the best possible sustainable transport for our area. And that may include rail, and it certainly should, from Newcastle to the renewable energy zone. And if we're lucky, it will improve it further north as well. But at the same time, we have to be realistic, and we cannot afford to subsidise everything to the hilt, because there are so many things this region needs. We need doctors, we need more infrastructure, we need this $27 million to raise Malta.
Thank you, Dorothy. Time's up, sorry, didn't give you the mic. Thank you. And I've just had a request, if there are no more people who want to ask a question, we'll leave the line as is. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Danny McKenzie. Is that working? Yes. I'm Danny McKenzie, you know me. The council brought in high-price water tanks about 4 years ago, Sam. We were all given water tanks that we wanted to buy at our price.
I think Dorothy and Margaret and Bradley.
Yeah, previous council, was it? Well, it was a brilliant move, and then it was stopped, which I think is very wrong. And I do think, being a war baby, that people need to learn to conserve again.
Question, please.
Question is, please bring back half price tanks and teach them to conserve.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'll say that's a very, very good idea. All the water saving measures we can get. That includes water tanks, includes smart water meters, and it includes fair pricing so that the people who use the most energy and the most water actually pay a fair price for it.
I'm happy to take that as a comment. I'm sure that the council will take that on board. Water is going to be one of the biggest priorities of the council in its first meeting. I can't think of what it means, but IWPM, International Water, something is going to, thank you, is going to give us is going to give the council a long report about how we use our water, what we do with our water, and you know, we'll leave it. I'm sure water comes to be on.
Thank you.
In order to support the proposal, the plan of the retiring council, staff stated that there will not be development of a water efficiency strategy until after Malpas Dam or Oakey scheme have been built to supply more water. Will you ensure that in this first year of your term that you will develop a plan and get funding funded by the council to ensure that all sectors of our community can improve the efficiency of their water use so that we don't need as much and we can cope with reducing the water level of Malpas while it's enlarged, if that's the way we could go. That's something which all council candidates could give a yes or no answer to. It's not a question of one, just a quick yes or no from each candidate.
All those who vote yes? All those who vote no? Thank you. I think the yeses have it.
My question is for Sam Copeland. In the context of growing our region and in the context of the Climate Emergency Declaration of 2019, from which we've had respite during your term in council, how do you envisage, aside from water, which we've already talked about, how do you envisage council being prepared for and meeting the climate risks that the evidence around Australia and the world shows us we're facing?
Thanks, Helen. That's a really solid question there. Council does take its climate commitments very seriously. To the extent, as you'll be aware, we have Project 030, which is an advisory group between UNE and ARC, and it talks about how can council itself as a body become carbon neutral by 2030. There are some big initiatives there.
Risk, not decreasing emissions, risk.
Look, there is no doubt that if population grows, then of course the risk is that our carbon goes up.
Not carbon, risk from climate
impact. Oh. Honestly, I think that's probably well outside my skill set. But that said, I don't need to know everything. I just need to know people who know everything. And that's one of the benefits of a community like Armidale. We all know someone who knows someone who actually knows something. And so we need to tap into that. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Veronica, and via Sam, Mr. Mayor, you have a candidate on your ticket, and I do apologise because I don't know your name, but I do know that you are a professor from the University of Minnesota.
I reckon I know who she is.
And I noticed that you did comment about, you're contrasting your experience living in Minnesota as a university town to living in Armidale as a university town and wanting to strengthen that. What are your ideas to strengthen the town and gown community?
Thank you. It's a really great question. And thank you for finally mentioning the university, because as the largest employer in this town, it hasn't had very much focus tonight. And I think that's something that we really need to reconsider. So the question that Sam just received about Project Zero 30 and how we're going to be more sustainable going forward and how we're preparing for climate, these are all things that research can help with, and this is where the university is really strong. So let's really leverage that partnership. My experience at university in Minnesota isn't so much relevant as my experience in small town New Hampshire and my experience all around the world. And looking at places where water is very marginal. My own research looks at places where water is marginal. In archaeology, a lot of people have abandoned places throughout history because they had no water. So I think, in a very short answer, we need to leverage the expertise that we have at this university. We need to work better as partners, in close partnership, and let's not, as Sam said, let's not try and solve all our problems together, but let's ensure constant, clear communication and real partnership. And that's something that I haven't seen, at least in my 10 years in Armidale, and that's something that we do have the power to affect. So a lot of what we've heard tonight we can't do much about, but what we can do something about is working together and making sure that our strategies align. And that's something that hasn't happened, and so that's one thing that I will ensure that we have going forward is strategic alignment and continued cooperation and clear communication. So thank you for that question.
First of all, the two things briefly I would say, the council that's going to be, the mob that's going to be voted in for the new council, can you please, without disrespecting my other over there, listen to the voices of the, because this community has got Goombangi and Adelaide, and this council mob are dividing our community, you know, with the water, with the train thing, the road to down the coast, down to Bellbrook Way, that we used to travel the road all the time when we were little, and it was dangerous, and we thought we'll never ever get it fixed up. But because our business came in, the Hydra, that road been fixed up. So never say never. The people that want the train line gone, never say never, because it's possible.
Sam, with regard to the situation pertaining to David Peters, could you please clarify what's going on there? And specifically, has council been blocking his developments?
Hello. That's a good question, because David Peters Group has been bandied around a lot. It was used just then as a bit of a baton to bludgeon council as blocking, which I think was really unfortunate turn of events. Councillors, we are not involved in the operations, in the day-to-day operations of council. And Brad spoke about this when he gave them the batting, that there's a lot to learn. When you're a councillor, you're really part of an advisory body. You're not getting your hands dirty, you're not approving DAs, etc., etc. That said, because the project that's being mooted by David Peters has been around for a while, there's some very vocal local advocates. I do check in from time to time to see what's going on, to see if we have blocked anything. And there isn't a DA in there to block. There hasn't actually been any meaningful engagement with council, as I understand it, for over 18 months. Every couple of months, our team call him to see, is he going to be doing anything? Can we help? And we just get dead air. So short answer is we haven't done any blocking, and I think it's unfortunate that those sort of terms get bandied about, particularly because it directs back at staff. We have really dedicated staff at council who do a fantastic job, and you really need to think very carefully. If you're bagging the councillors and the council itself, you're really attacking staff, and I'd encourage people not to do that. It's not right.
Last question.
Rob Richardson from Ruralee. Rob, I want to ask you with regards to your knowledge and experience and water issues, water security has been a big issue that's been brought up today, tonight. I'd like to know your thoughts and your solutions in regards to moving forward with regards to water security for the region.
Sounds like a Dorothy Dixer, but Rob, go ahead.
Is this on?
Thank you, Shane. Yeah, another Dorothy Dixer. There's been a few of them tonight. Look, I've been very involved in the water issue since 2019, the drought, which wasn't brilliantly handled by council, but it probably wasn't brilliantly handled by any of us because it was sort of uncharted territory. The person who I think did so much was Adam Marshall. And I worked with Adam and people like Rob Lenehan and the Aotearoa Ratepayers Association worked closely with Adam. And in around 2022, Adam secured this $27 million that everyone's been talking a lot about tonight. I'll come back to that later. The money was... Adam reserved the money. I was in text contact with him on that day in, I think it was... June 23rd, 2022, and I asked him if he got the money. He said it's been reserved pending a business plan. I've asked who was responsible for that business plan. Was it council? Well, certainly wasn't Adam's responsibility. And then really nothing happened, and council then purchased Oakey River Dam for $4.3 million. Damaged dam, but at the time, and I remember talking to Todd Redwood about it, I supported the idea of another storage dam, potential storage dam on a different water catchment, just for safety. I disagree with Sam that the Ryanda catchment is an efficient catchment. It's incredible. When everything's in alignment, that works incredibly well, and melts can fill up very, very quickly. I don't know as much about the Oakey River catchment, but I do know that that dam, the cost to repair and bring a pipeline into Armidale is $120 million plus. My big issue was, why didn't council tell us that $27 million wasn't available anymore? I only found out a few months ago. I asked the question of the general manager at the last ratepayers meeting, and he said it wasn't put in the state budget, and his final suggestion to me was to ask Adam Marshall. Adam shouldn't be being blamed for this. Why weren't we told? No one's talked a lot about transparency. There's a lack of transparency on this very tightly controlled council.
What an interesting evening we've had. Big round of applause to our team, please, for managing that. Another big round of applause to all our candidates. We wish them well in their campaigns and in the coming election. And as you see on the screen, our next forum is on the 2nd of October, and it's Ezeedy Settlement in Armidale. We have a panel of four so far. That should be a very interesting evening. That's another free event. There's no need to register. Put it in your calendar. Please come along. We hope that you will find out how the settlement has gone in the 5 years since the first Ezeedy's arrived in Armidale, whether there were any impediments to that settlement, whether there are still problems to solve. So please come along. I think that will be a fascinating evening. Thank you very much for coming tonight. It's been fantastic to see you all, and I wish you a very pleasant evening. Thank you.
Broadcast, then podcast.
If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.